May be seated. We're here on case 13-332 in the matter of State of Ohio versus Donald Lee Johnson. For the appellant, Ms. Mahosik.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, my name is Kelly Mahosik, and I represent defendant appellant Donald Johnson. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issue in this case is whether a defendant's counsel on appeal has a right to access and review a pre-sentence investigation report as part of an investigation into possible appellate issues. The answer to that question is yes. The plain and unambiguous language of 295103 states that a defendant's counsel shall have access to a pre-sentence investigation report for purposes authorized by the revised code. The revised code states that a defendant has the right to appeal his sentence, and the statute 295103 also specifically states that a pre-sentence investigation report is reviewable for purposes of appealing a defendant's felony sentence. Despite the state's claim to the contrary, allowing a defendant or a defendant's counsel access to a pre-sentence investigation report for purpose of investigating appellate issues, it will not alter the confidential nature of that report. Counsel can review that report either in court chambers or in his or her office and return it to the court or to another authorized holder.
Counsel, where does it say, where does the statute say that the PSI can be used for purposes of an appeal? What particular point in the statute are you referring to?
In section 295103D1, the statute states the court, an appellate court, defendant's counsel may inspect, receive copies of, or retain copies of a pre-sentence investigation report for purposes authorized by the revised code, including section 295308. 295308 is the provision of the revised code that sets forth the reasons that a defendant may appeal his criminal or her criminal sentence. Moreover, the common usage of the phrase defendant's counsel necessarily includes a defendant's counsel on appeal. That whether a person is an appellant or an appellee is merely a label that attaches to the person that files the notice of appeal or prevails below.
But counsel, how do you square that with the language about returning the report, returning any copies that were made, returning summaries? How does that square with use of it on appeal?
There's a provision in 295103, which is section B, which talks about a defendant or defendant's counsel access to the pre-sentence report before sentencing. And section B deals exclusively with how to resolve factual inaccuracies or disputes regarding the pre-sentence investigation report before sentencing. And that deals with returning it at the conclusion of that review. Subsection D deals with who else has access to the report and who else is able to review it. Simply allowing them to review it doesn't make it non-confidential. And simply because it remains a sealed document that isn't open to public disclosure doesn't mean that a defendant's appellate attorney can't review that document and then turn it back in either to the Court of Appeals or the probation office.
Can you tell me let's say that the statute is not clear, or let's say that we disagree with you, that there is some ambiguity in the statute about whether the appellate counsel could review it. Do you need to look at, are you looking at due process rights? Are you looking at right to counsel rights? Can you tie this in with what is your constitutional argument there?
The constitutional argument is twofold. It's both the due process right to access to the report and information, as well as the right to the effective assistance of counsel that belongs to the defendant. The due process right is the right to a meaningful appeal, and the United States Supreme Court and even this court has recognized that as part of the right to a meaningful appeal, an attorney needs access to the basic information used to make the sentencing punishment determinations and to investigate issues.
If we can just, if you can focus in on just due process, not the right to counsel, but on the due process right, wouldn't the defendant have a due process met because the appellate court is still required to independently look at the record, look at the PSI itself, and make a determination about whether it's contrary to law? So doesn't that satisfy due process?
If I understand your question correctly, you're asking simply because the Court of Appeals can look at the pre-sentence investigation report even without counsel looking at it?
Correct.
That does not satisfy due process. In Douglas v. California, the United States Supreme Court recognized that an ex parte examination of the record by a Court of Appeals without an advocate for the defendant avoids or does not allow a defendant to have a meaningful appeal. When there's information contained in the transcript or a pre-sentence investigation report, that information is subject to multiple interpretations. And the defendant is entitled to somebody that can advocate his or her position on that material. The court, as a neutral fact finder, decides or resolves those issues. But the defendant is entitled to someone to advocate on his or her behalf the specific position that he or she wants.
And so, Ms. Mahochik, does it make any difference if the court says, I've reviewed this PSI, and then talks about the sentence? Does it make a difference if the court has relied upon the pre-sentence report in the portion of its colloquy to the defendant before sentencing?
If the pre-sentence investigation report is prepared, and the court, even if it doesn't specify that it reviewed it, the defendant should still have, or defendant's counsel should still have access to the document because it is part of the trial court record. It is going to be a portion of the record on appeal. And so because even the Court of Appeals is going to be reviewing that information, the defendant and or his counsel should be allowed to review that information. If the court specifically says that it has relied on the information, I think it merely bolsters or strengthens the position that defendant or defendant's counsel needs to review that information so that it can make sure that it's being properly interpreted.
To your understanding, is this process being used in any court throughout the state where the defense counsel is requesting a copy of the PSI for purposes of appeal under the D section that you've talked about?
There are different procedures in place throughout the state of Ohio. There's no consistent way that this is being used, but in Athens County, one can merely go down and request to look at the PSI, and then the PSI is provided to appellate counsel for review. In Montgomery County, in the second district, the defendant or defendant's counsel needs leave of court and files a motion requesting to view the PSI. In the fourth district, oftentimes it requires a motion, and then the PSI will be provided to defendant or defendant's counsel. Sometimes the PSI is mailed out to counsel with the information redacted that cannot be disclosed. Other times it has to be reviewed in chambers or in the probation department. But yes, this provision is being used to allow defendant's attorney on appeal to review the pre-sentence investigation report.
Should there be a requirement for a motion before the PSI is given to counsel? How should, if we were to accept your position, should the court in any way talk about the procedure that would allow for the access that you're requesting?
I don't believe a motion should be allowed. I think the plain and unambiguous language of this statute says that a defendant's attorney has a right to access that information. And so I don't think this court needs to state precisely the procedures that need to be followed in order for defendant counsel to have
so that can
access.
Be a matter of local procedure in any particular court.
Correct.
And I take it, counsel, you wouldn't go beyond the fourth district, I'm forgetting which appellate district laid out. We're not giving you the portions that the trial court said wouldn't be released, that those are kept confidential. So even under those circumstances, appellate counsel would still not be able to see those portions of the report.
Correct.
Okay.
What Mr. Johnson is asking for is the same information that the defendant's attorney in the trial court had access to, as well as the prosecutor.
Okay.
And at this time, we're not requesting anything beyond that.
And that's the.
Well,
I was thinking of the Fourth District, the State v. Jordan, where the court laid out. So you would follow. You think that was an adequate procedure?
Yes.
Okay.
Does our opinion then have to lay out those procedures as it's done in the statute and done by the Fourth?
No, I think this court's decision merely needs to state that a defendant shall have defendant and defendant's counsel on appeal shall have access to a pre-sentence investigation report in accordance with 2953.01(d)(1). And that as far in, this court would be free, obviously, at that point to say that, you know, it's up to local rule on how those procedures are to be followed so long as defendant's attorney on appeal is allowed to review that same information.
Your argument is simply that the reference to the defense counsel includes appellate counsel. That's all it really is.
Exactly, yes. And that the plain and common usage of defendant's counsel necessarily includes appellate counsel. Otherwise, they would get very verbose trying to say appellant's counsel on appeal or appellant or appellee. So I think there's good reason why the legislature didn't specify appellant, appellee in the rule. This is in the statute. It's a concise statute, and the common usage of defendant's counsel.
Counsel, you used the word Athens before. You said maybe in Athens County you can just walk down to the clerk's office and take a look. And maybe in Montgomery County it's a little stiffer. And Cuyahoga County might even be a little more rigid. And I don't see anything in the statute that uses the word shall, either at the trial court level or at the appellate court level. Can you explain to me what the practice is in the state of Ohio? Does, on a due process question, does counsel always have the right to read everything that a judge is using to rely on to sentence an individual?
Due process does have its limitations. And at this point, Mr. Johnson is not challenging those portions that are not subject to disclosure under the statute. Because statutes have a presumption of constitutionality, Mr. Johnson takes the position at this time that those portions that exclude certain information are within due process limits. But other information that isn't protected for any valid reason, that's simply being withheld because the court doesn't want to turn it over, Mr. Johnson does have a constitutional right to that information because there is a right under due process to a fair playing field. Mr. Johnson has the right to see the same information that the court relied upon, that the prosecutor used, that the pre-sentence investigation report includes crucial information, includes circumstances surrounding the offense, which may be used to find that the defendant committed the worst form of the offense, or it may be used to mitigate his or her sentence. And without access to that information, the defendant doesn't know how the court reached that decision, and it prevents the defendant from having a meaningful appeal. And so that information is really needed. There are instances, Renika Stroud, where the court looked to the pre-sentence investigation report and found that the facts didn't support the imposition of such a harsh sentence. There are many instances where the Court of Appeals affirms the imposition of fines based on financial information included in the pre-sentence investigation report.
I guess that's my question, because it just seems to me the question you're raising today is more generic for all the 88 counties, in the sense that don't we have a situation here where a trial court is looking at a pre-sentence investigation and relying upon it, the Court of Appeals is looking at a pre-sentence investigation and relying on it, and defense counsel has never seen the report?
Correct. Well, the statute allows defendant's attorney in the trial court to review the pre-sentence investigation report before sentencing. But according to the 12th District of Butler County, once that happens, the defendant no longer has access or the ability to review that. And the due process clause does allow an appellant attorney to review that. It's one of the basic tools needed for a meaningful appeal.
But if in the practical application here, usually the appellate counsel is not the trial counsel.
Correct. Again,
you know, there's another attorney that's appointed on appeal. So in reality, they've never seen the PSI. The prosecutor, however, is usually the same office, and invariably the same office. And if the trial counsel is not doing the appeal, that's done in conjunction with the appellate division of the prosecutor's office. So there is a sharing of information within the prosecutor's office that is often not on the same dimension in the appellate version, or the appellate side. For the defendant, the defendant's appellate attorney may or may not have a close relationship with counsel
from the trial representation, especially if there's going to be arguments of ineffective assistance at counsel.
Correct. When there's lots of assumptions, that a defendant's counsel on appeal has to know whether or not the trial attorney, defendant's trial attorney, even reviewed the pre-sentence investigation report. He or she may not have looked at it. And then the information, we don't know how old it is, memories fade over time, that information may never get passed along to defendant's attorney on appeal.
Are you precluded as a defense attorney from taking notes from the PSI?
Nothing prevents a person from taking notes from the PSI. They are not allowed to, under the statute, you're not allowed to make copies and retain those copies. You
right.
do have to turn
but
those back in.
But you can take notes and jot down what the contents are.
Correct.
Counsel, did you just say you don't have the right to retain copies of the PSI? Under D1, do you not have that right?
It says retain copies of, correct. And then it says, in accordance with the statute that goes on, and I think that puts a limitation on the person's ability to retain in perpetuity, because the statute does say that it shall be turned back into an authorized holder where it shall remain under seal. And I think ultimately that's kind of the goal, overarching scheme of the statute, is that ultimately, for whatever reason, the legislature determined that PSIs are special, they need to be treated differently, and they needed to be safe kept and not become a public record.
Right. But before sentencing, you don't make copies and give them to defense counsel. Before sentencing, you have the right to look at them. But D1, for purposes of appeal, allow you to have a copy, retain a copy, and use it for purposes of appeal. Isn't that correct?
Correct. And okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so loud there. And I believe that then at the conclusion of the appeal, you have to turn that back into the authorized.
Because it's confidential.
Correct.
Okay.
Can we stay on that point for a moment? Where in the statute do you think it would say that after the appeal, you have to turn that back in? I mean, I recognize that the statute doesn't specifically preclude that, but it really just talks about after sentencing what happens.
Wouldn't it be under 2953.08F1?
That is describes the record on appeal.
Right.
Correct.
And it says on appeal, talking about the record being confidential and so on.
Yes. And it also, I think it's D3 that talks about turning it back. Mm-hmm. Turning it back in at the conclusion to the authorized holder of the documents. It says D3, except when a PSI is being used as authorized by Criminal 32-2, 2953, 2947, the court or other authorized holder of the PSI shall retain the report. And so I think at the conclusion of everything, ultimately it needs to be turned back in.
Okay, thank you.
Based on the plain and unambiguous language of the statute, Mr. Johnson asked that this court rule that a defendant's attorney on appeal has access to the pre-sentence investigation report for purposes of investigating issues for an appeal. He further asked that the Butler County Court of Appeals be directed to allow defendant's attorney to review that report and that this case be remanded for further briefing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. I would like to start with the statutory language. It does not indicate that a defendant's appellate counsel has access to it. The General Assembly did distinguish between the lower court and the appellate court in subdivision D1.
Counsel, why would the General Assembly do that? I mean, can you articulate a rational basis for having a statute that precludes an appellate counsel from having access to the PSI? What's the basis for that?
The information in the PSI is very confidential, it is sensitive, and all courts have acknowledged that, including this court. It is always indicated that this report must be under seal.
It must be under seal, but there's also a disclosure to trial counsel prior to sentencing with the redaction of certain types of information that are statutorily identified, correct?
Yes.
So you have no argument that a trial counsel can have the document redacted in their hands, correct?
Yes, they have access to it, correct.
All right. And they can talk to their client about it?
Correct.
All right. But you don't see that as being available to an appellate attorney, the same redacted copy?
that was sufficient to be disclosed and shared with both counsel and defendant below cannot be used for the appeals process.
Correct. And the reason it is shared with the defense counsel and the defendant is because he has the right to challenge any factual inaccuracy in that report. And that report, let's look at Division A1. That report includes his criminal record, his social history, his present condition of the defendant. These are all information that the defendant has firsthand knowledge of.
Counsel, well, but counsel, if it's not accurately reflected in the PSI and it is accepted by the trial court, the inaccuracies, and there is an argument raised, and say there's an exaggeration of the defendant's criminal record in the PSI, and it's just, you know, it's just plain wrong. And it's pointed out to the trial court, and the trial court doesn't do anything, in fact, relies on that PSI and makes a sentencing decision. Is that not the subject of an appeal?
It is, and it would be on record, Your Honor, at the trial court level, on record based on B2 and 5. He has the right to challenge it, and then you put that on the record, and even he has the right to present testimony regarding this alleged inaccuracy.
And so, the PSI then is available to the appellate court?
No, Your Honor, but the alleged factual inaccuracy, they can put that on the record. Nothing prevents defense counsel from saying the PSI says A. However, defendant challenges that, and based on our facts, it should be B.
That works perfectly. The answer was yes, was it not, to the chief? It is available to the appellate court. They have the PSI, do they not?
Correct, but it will not be available to appellate counsel.
But the appellate court has it. I guess that's the question we're asking today. What if, for example, the Court of Appeals judges had sent some personal notes to this panel, and we all had notes from the judge, and they told us why they did what they did, and you're arguing before us, but you don't know what's in those notes? Isn't that a deprivation of your due process rights to have a meaningful hearing? How can you have a Court of Appeals ruling on something that you don't know what they're ruling on?
Your Honor, but this is an exception. We did have access to it at the trial level.
That all works perfectly fine when the same lawyer represents the defendant in the trial court and then represents that same defendant on appeal, such as when a counsel has been retained in a criminal case. But if the lawyers are different, doesn't the appellate lawyer have the right to raise an issue of ineffective assistance of trial counsel in failing to raise an issue that should have been raised out of that report and brought to the attention of the sentencing court in a timely fashion?
Your Honor, he may bring it up, and the trial and the Court of Appeals has a duty to review that.
But the appellate counsel would not know whether or not trial counsel had been effective absent the opportunity to look at that pre-sentence investigation report. So maybe something should have been raised on an issue of restitution, or maybe it should have been raised on a prior criminal conviction, or maybe it should have been raised on any number of issues. But unless or until appellate counsel gets a chance to review it, he or she would have no idea that the defense counsel at trial was or wasn't effective. So doesn't effective representation play into this in terms of being effective as counsel for the Court of Appeals?
Yes, Your Honor, but appellate counsel has the best information, the defendant. He has firsthand knowledge
and
of
you think the defendant is going to be able to articulate exactly what restitution is required or what fines should have been paid or what analysis should have been done on a financial background and can articulate that to a defense counsel on appeal?
The restitution, in order to provide restitution, the judge has to find what economic loss the victim had. So we will have that on the record. And his financial...
In a perfect world, you will, but appellate counsel can raise an issue about it. And appellate counsel wouldn't be able to do that unless they had the chance to look at that report.
Well, that PSI will only provide of what the financial condition of the defendant is and his financial ability.
Okay.
How do you look at D1 of the statute? D1 of the statute includes defendant's counsel, and it says may inspect, receive copies of, retain copies of, and use the pre-sentence investigation report, and then it goes on and talks about the appellate statute. How do you interpret that?
In this section, it's only given to them prior to sentence, based on B1, prior to sentence. And until sentence is imposed...
D1 does not say anything about prior to sentence, does it?
No, in B1, you're provided that report prior to sentence.
Right, and that's a separate thing.
Correct.
D1 is a separate statute. D1 does not talk about prior to sentencing.
Correct.
It specifically says, as I just quoted, you can use it for purposes of appeal. How do you get around that?
For purposes of addressing sentencing issues, of challenging your sentence, F1 indicates that it is part of the record on appeal. It must remain under seal. And that is what that's for, is that it's just for purposes of challenging your sentence.
So you get the copy and you retain the copy for that purpose.
Until sentence is imposed, according to D2, immediately upon sentence, you must return that copy you retained just for that limited purpose.
But then it goes to the appellate court under seal.
Correct.
All right. And what's the appellate court supposed to do with it?
It is mandatory to review it when a sentence is challenged based on whether it's maximum sentence, consecutive, or just a sentence.
Okay, and so I'm a new appellate attorney. I wasn't the defendant's attorney below. I don't know what the PSI says. I don't know if there's an error in that on which the trial judge relied and sentenced a harsher sentence because there's some erroneous information about my client's criminal record. And how am I supposed to effectively appeal a sentence if I don't know one of the very important components that the judge relied on in making that sentence?
You rely on what the record transcript says, whether there wasn't any challenge to it or not.
Okay, the trial court or the attorney below didn't challenge it, maybe didn't review it sufficiently to mount a challenge at sentencing. How am I even going to know what the defense counsel below was erroneous in not bringing to the court's attention?
You also have access to the defendant. Defendant also has access to it. According to D1, it's the defendant.
Well, say the defendant didn't see the PSI.
Then you just challenge it, and then you have to
just challenge it based
rely
on what?
On challenge
the
it based
trial
on
court sentence was unsupported by the pre-sentence investigation. I'm going to make some kind of unsupported allegation at the appellate level?
No, Your Honor. Based on it is contrary to law, which requires the Court of Appeals then to review that report and make sure that it does correspond with.
How am I going to argue that it's contrary to law if I haven't even seen the PSI to say that the sentence is contrary to law based on the contents of the PSI?
Again, you have the information from the defendant directly from the defendant. And
let me just cut to the chase. Why do you care whether appellate counsel, why does the state concerned about appellate counsel reviewing the PSI?
Because it's important to follow what the legislation wrote. And here,
and
what is
fair interpretation could be that under D1, that counsel means appellate counsel. All right, so what's the worst thing that's going to happen if appellate counsel is able to review the PSI and use that document in aid of their constitutionally protected right of appeal?
Again, it's in violation of what the General Assembly wrote.
Let's presume the General Assembly meant appellate counsel.
Then we would not be here today, Your Honor.
So your only argument is that word counsel doesn't say appellate counsel, so appellate counsel doesn't get the PSI.
Correct, Your Honor. And every section indicates prior to sentencing. And in D2, it specifically says immediately following the imposition, it shall return.
But counsel, we're not just dealing with a statute. There's a constitutional principle at play, and well, in fact, two. We've got due process concerns, and we've got the right to effective counsel. So even if we agree with you that the statute is maybe ambiguous or maybe it doesn't give the right to appellate counsel, how do you respond to the due process and appellate counsel rights that are at play?
Your Honor, it's actually, we're on the same footing as a defendant. The state is on the same footing as a defendant. The prosecutor who is handling the case.
That doesn't answer due process, and that doesn't answer why, if a defendant has the right to an effective appellate counsel, that's what we're concerned about. We're not concerned about whether the state's rights in some way might be violated. We're only dealing with the defendant. So how do you respond to those rights held by the defendant?
Because whether you have access to the PSI or not, which has been the case, it's always been rejected in the prior cases. We have the 12th district, the 11th district, and defendants in those counties have challenged their sentences, and challenged sentences have risen all the way here without appellate counsel having access to it because of 2953.08.
Counsel, let me see if I can make this even more simple. Recently, this court heard a case where the trial court said, in arriving at consecutive sentences, I relied upon what was in the pre-sentence investigation, without saying what was in the pre-sentence investigation. Now, on the Court of Appeals, you're admitting that that pre-sentence investigation is part of the record, right?
Correct.
And is it the position of the state of Ohio that when somebody is going to jail for 10 years and the judge and the appeals judges are ruling on what is in an envelope, they're not allowed to look inside that envelope? The defendant who's going to jail is not allowed to look inside that at the appellate level. Can't look.
Yes, Your Honor, but with consecutive...
Was that a yes?
With consecutive, though, however, there has to be special findings. There has to be special...
I understand that. I'm talking about a defendant is going to jail for 10 years, a judge is relying on what's in an envelope, and you're saying they do not have a right to know what's in that envelope.
He already did have a right to know what is that envelope at
the
trial
level.
What
if he didn't exercise that right?
It indicates it shall permit them access to it. It's mandatory to permit them. If there was a violation of not permitting, then we have a violation of the statutory provision. And then we have a reversal saying, you didn't give him the right, your statutory right to review it. Then that would be the issue here, and then we would be remanding it. They have the right to review it, the right to challenge it, the right to even present testimony challenging it.
Well, when you say they, you mean the defendant, him or herself.
And
because you've got two different attorneys at work here. You've got the trial attorney and you have the appellate attorney in most situations.
Yes, Chief Justice. I am referring to the trial level attorney, trial level defendant. Even this court, in their brief, they indicate this court distinguishes a defendant from an appellant, references defendant appellant, defendant appellee. Defendant appellees.
Okay, so in the practical world, you've got a defendant that might have a sixth grade education. You've got this multi-page technical document. It's given to the attorney. Can the attorney take that report, go over to the holding cell, if that's where he, or over to the jail? Can they take that document with them out of the courthouse?
Yes, Your Honor, as long as it's done prior to the imposition of sentence. It doesn't limit them how they access it. They have the right to review it.
They can give it to the defendant?
Yes, because it specifically says, the statute says.
Can the defendant take that with them back to the jail cell and pore over it?
It depends on the time frame if it's done prior to the imposition of sentence, because the statutory indicates the defendant or the defendant's counsel.
And that's the practice that is in place, that the defendant can take the PSI, go back to the jail or the institute, wherever they are, and review that and have that in their possession.
As long as the trial court provides them a reasonable time prior to sentence, if they're provided that with sufficient time to do that. Because at that point, the PSI would be redacted of confidential information and what the recommendation is. So it would only include his criminal record, his social history, his present condition, all information that
he... So the defendant could go back and copy it verbatim and return the original copy and retain their notes and the contents. Is that... Correct.
As long as it's not a copy, to
as
write
long as
it verbatim.
It's not made on a copy machine, but they're handwriting it out. Okay, and so there it is that defendant can give that document to their appellate counsel, and you don't have any problem with that.
if we read the statute as written without adding any words, no adding additional words, it indicates you're allowed a copy to review it prior to sentencing.
Return the copy.
Return it immediately
following. But doesn't
say anything
about you making a copy of the copy.
No.
So you can have that document floating around and 100 people can read it, but the appellate counsel can't get it through the direct course of asking for it.
And again, if we read the statute as written, without adding the words, we don't have appellate counsel in that wording.
We don't have the word trial counsel either. It says defendant's counsel.
Correct.
And defendant's counsel includes trial counsel, includes appellate counsel, appellee counsel. If it's, I mean, that word is much broader. When I was listening to you, you were using the term trial counsel, and you talk about how the statute is written.
Yeah.
So you can't make that distinction on one hand and not make it on the other, can you?
Justice, I can, because we need to read the other words within the same provisions. It indicates prior to sentence.
But not in D1.
In D1, it does not.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Trial courts are reversed all the time on appeal. Their sentences are reversed all the time on appeal. In order to effectively review those sentences that are imposed, defendant's attorney needs to be able to investigate the information that was relied upon by the trial court in making that determination. Those pre-sentence investigation reports contain crucial information, detailed circumstances surrounding the crime, which were made by an officer working for the probation department in those circumstances. And that subjective interpretation needs to be advocated for the defendant. 2951.03, plain and unambiguous language, allows defendant's counsel access to that pre-sentence investigation report for purposes of investigating issues for appeal. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. Ladies and gentlemen, you'll be notified of our decision.